Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis today, not exactly in that order. We're also sponsored today by Simply Safe Home Security. Protect your home the smart way without the expensive long-term contracts using Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. And more on the exciting developments that Simply Safe Home Security is providing a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, we actually start with the bad martini today, and it's a follow-up to, well, our martini from yesterday regarding National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. We talked about how he was on the ropes as a result of all of a sudden him not actually remembering and not being able to clearly deny discussing the pending Obama sanctions on Russia when he was working for then-President-elect Trump as his soon-to-be national security advisor. Within the last 48 hours, we also got the reports about how the Justice Department, with then-acting Attorney General Sally Yates, letting the White House know Flynn was potentially vulnerable to blackmail from Russia and that he probably had talked about the sanctions issue and so forth. A lot happened since we had that podcast yesterday. First, there was Kellyanne Conway speaking with Steve Kornacki on MSNBC, and this happened.
Does the National Security Advisor right now enjoy the full confidence of President Trump?
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president.
Well, that came almost the exact same time that Sean Spicer told reporters, well, the president's evaluating the situation. We'll get back to you on that. And then last night, all the cable news people were scrambling to get their people back in place because Michael Flynn tendered his resignation. Part of his statement says, in the course of my duties as the incoming National Security Advisor, I held numerous phone calls with foreign counterparts, ministers, and ambassadors. These calls were to facilitate a smooth transition and begin to build the necessary relationships between the president, his advisors, and foreign leaders. Such calls are standard practice in any transition of this magnitude. Unfortunately, because of the fast pace of events, I inadvertently briefed the vice president-elect and others with incomplete information related to his conversations with the Russian ambassador. So this is the story we got from Kellyanne Conway this morning on ABC.
President Trump has asked me to join you today to say that he accepted the resignation of General Flynn. And really, the key here in that resignation is very simple. It's that the Vice President, Mike Pence, was misled by General Flynn, or General Flynn could not completely recall what his conversations had been.
So, obvious lesson, don't lie to Mike Pence in this administration, Jim. But the larger issue here is that this baggage was known about for quite some time.
Yeah, Greg, I could have spun this as, oh, it's a good martini, in the sense that if you have to take off a Band-Aid, better to rip it off and get all the pain out of the way at once instead of peeling it away slowly and making the pain last longer. But I think this has to end up in the bad martini category because this was a pretty predictable and I think avoidable mess for the administration. Mike Flynn had always been a controversial guy. And yes, he has some friends in the national security establishment, some folks who really liked what he was doing at DIA. But there were a lot of people who didn't, and I think it wasn't necessarily even an ideological disagreement, although I'm sure there were several of those. Flynn always was a little more cuddly or more likely to play footsie with Russia. I think his ties to Russia and you know, let's just say he was an inveterate optimist when it came to the possibilities of U.S.-Russian cooperation. And that's not necessarily cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but it was a minority opinion, and he just tended to rub a lot of people the wrong way. People who you'd think might have been allies. As we talked about yesterday, the really big question is, if you're going to be national security advisor in a presidential administration, people need to trust you. They need to believe that when you tell them, you know, X, Y, and Z, that the truth is not A, B, and C. And if you don't do that, and if they feel like they no longer can trust you, you really can't stay in the job. And so, look, to the extent it came down, if it came down to Pence versus Flynn, I think the president very much made the right choice, and I think it's a good sign. I think this – I was on a CNN yesterday in the part of the roundtable, and the guy said, oh, this just shows the Trump philosophy filtering down through the administration. They're all shameless liars. You can make that argument, but I think there's a slight good sign in the fact that Trump did not stick by Flynn and did not insist, you know, oh, well, if all of Washington's telling me I got to get rid of him, I'll show them, I'll keep him. I think this was an indicator that he wants his – he's not happy with the way his administration is working. He wants things to – the wheels to turn a little more smoothly, and I think this will get something – out. You know, I think probably – better days are ahead for this administration. But why I can't say, oh, this is good news, is the fact that really this was very predictable. And what's kind of frustrating is almost everybody in the national security community could see some variation of this problem coming forward. And Trump ignored all of them. One of the reasons we were discussing yesterday that Trump might not get rid of Flynn was that the inherent admission that he made the wrong choice when he picked Flynn for this job. I think it's a good sign that Trump was able to overcome that. Overcome any sense of ego or sense that he had made a mistake by trusting Flynn, and by saying, you know what, he got to use his signature phrase, or at least, you know, he didn't get to say you're fired. Flynn resigned, but he accepted the resignation, and maybe there'll be a slightly smoother, you know, less choppy seas for the administration in the months and years to come.
Yeah, if there's a positive silver lining to this first bad martini here, there's two aspects that we should tell you about where this process goes from here. According to the Washington Post, anyway, Pence is now leading the discussions and working closely with people like Defense Secretary Mattis, Homeland Security Secretary Kelly, CIA Director Pompeo, and so forth, in searching for the new National Security Advisor. There have been some rumors about David Petraeus, which a lot of people don't like, given his issues with classified information. And so one of the names popping up, and obviously we don't want to assume that this is going to happen, but Vice Admiral Robert Harward, who is known to be a strong Mattis ally. So, Jim, I think if there's a philosophy of let's stick close to General Mattis and things should probably turn out fairly well, that might be one of the better strategies of this administration.
I certainly have an open mind to that, Greg, but I still have to know what that particular general does when he has tears in his eyes.
That will never get old. That will never, ever get old. All right, on to the good martini now. Good martini comes second today. This actually happened on Sunday on Meet the Press. It's been a while since we heard from Jim Webb. The last time we saw Jim Webb in any significant setting, it was at the very first Democratic presidential debate in 2015. He was the only one on stage even remotely close to rational answers on a number of key issues. So, of course, he had no support among the Democratic base. So he goes on to talk about the problems with the Democratic Party with Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press. And here's a couple of clips where Jim Webb is trying to speak truth to his party that's probably not very interested in listening to him now either.
The Democratic Party over the past 5 or 6 years has moved very far to the left. You know, when you can't have a Jefferson-Jackson dinner, which was the primary, you know, celebratory event of the Democratic Party for years, because Jefferson and Jackson were slaveholders. They were also great Americans in their day. Something just different has happened to the Democratic Party.
But, of course, not that many people voted against the Democrats over Jefferson-Jackson Day dinners. Webb got to an even bigger issue.
The message that has been shaped by the Democratic Party has been shaped toward identity politics, and they've lost the key part of their base, the people that, and you know, my family history goes back to the Roosevelt Democrats, the people who believe that regardless of any of these identity segments, you need to have a voice in the quarters of power for those who have no voice. And we've lost that with the Democratic Party.
Hard to argue with that, Jim.
Yeah. One of the points I made in today's Jolt is the idea that reality always wins. Eventually, you can walk around in a certain amount of denial. You can walk around in a certain amount of fantasy for a certain time. But sooner or later, reality reasserts itself. And, you know, the ideal is to not, you know, slam into the wall at 65 miles an hour when you do that. For the Democrats, if you subscribe to a philosophy that, you know, men are oppressors and women are victims, right? And this is kind of this, you know, hard left, hard feminist narrative, not about empowering women, but about the inherent villainy of all men. Well, one, there's really not much appeal to men. They're not going to subscribe to that. There are there's a limited audience for people who are willing to buy into the idea that they are the root of all evil in life. coupled with the fact that all the women who love their husbands, love their boyfriends, love their fathers, brothers, sons, you know, they don't really buy into that either. They, you know, secondly, the idea of being a victim isn't going to appeal to a large number of women. A lot of women like to think of themselves as being strong and confident and capable. And I think the reason they like to think about themselves that way is because they are strong and confident and capable. So the entire victimhood narrative doesn't appeal to them. You can apply this to African Americans. You can apply this to Latinos. You can apply this to almost any group where the Democratic Party's message is generally, you have been wronged. You have been wronged and you have been kept down. And anything that's wrong in your life isn't really your fault. There's no individual responsibility here. It's them. And the them can be Republicans, big corporations, Christian conservatives, gun owners, Southerners, you name it. There's some group that's going to be picked on as the villain in your life. And your problems in your life are that person's, that group, that those people there. And as long as you elect us, we'll be able to take care of you. We, the paternal, all-powerful government, will take care of you from birth to death, just like Julia, the eyeless woman in that creepy timeline from the Obama administration. And I think it was Bill Clinton of all, somebody who said, you know, there are all kinds of people who, you know, the Obama administration paints this happy picture of how the American economy is doing. There are a lot of Americans can't see themselves in that picture for their lives. I feel their pain. And that, you know, Bill Clinton at least had the instincts to say, hey, this is not really an appealing portrait. People might look at that Julia timeline and say, but I don't want all that stuff from the government. And also, I don't know if I trust the government to give me all that stuff all that well. There's been a lot, you know, somewhere around the healthcare.gov debacle, the idea of relying on government for something you really need became a much shakier proposition. So this entire vision just isn't appealing enough. But if you look back to, say, 1992 era Bill Clinton, Al Gore, reinventing government type, at least that you could kind of understand. Some various other, you know, Democrats in the world, I realize this is, you know, a little out of step maybe, but there are Democrats who look at the world in a non-hard left way, who are a little bit more practical. And those are the ones that should keep Republicans up at night, because those are the ones who can really appeal well beyond university towns and big cities and things like that. So I don't think Democrats are going to listen to Jim Webb for a while. I think their you know, default approach is wait for Trump to screw up and you know, try to ride the backlash. But I think he speaks to a different kind of Democratic Party that has had a much broader appeal, and that I think at some point, maybe not this cycle, maybe not next cycle, but someday Democrats will realize that they can't wait, they cannot just count on demographics changing and you know, carrying them to victory, and that they're going to have to change how they what they expect government to do for people, and kind of put aside this, you know, endless whining millennial snowflake victimhood narrative. And rant.
Yes, it's an excellent rant. And of course, we hope they're unsuccessful largely in that effort, because we know ultimately where those policies lead. Even when Clinton made the pitch very effectively, we saw instantly in those first couple of years where he wanted to go policy-wise, and the country quickly rejected that in 1994. But given how divorced from reality the vast majority
Greg, let's not use the word divorce. Look, when I said the era of big government is over, I want you to listen to me. I did not have textual relations with that concept. I never meant it when I said it. It was just words. So, yeah. Greg, once I start doing Bill Clinton, it's hard to turn it off.
But yeah, they are way away, even on messaging and their policy prescriptions. When you see the popularity of Bernie Sanders, is just amazing as well. But so I don't know how to transition to SimpliSafe out of the Democratic morass that they're in. Perhaps if they had more SimpliSafe cameras, they would have seen the radicals hijacking their party before it actually happened. Jim, that's the best I can do. In early January, the Consumer Electronics Show wrapped up. The CES is an incredible trade show, as many of you know. All the big tech companies unveil their newest innovations. It's really like seeing the future right in front of your eyes.
Our sponsor, SimpliSafe Home Security, was there, and they had one of the most talked about products at the show, the new SimpliSafe security camera. It connects to the sensors in your alarm system so that if an intruder tries to break in, the camera will automatically start recording. Then, not only will your SimpliSafe Home Security system call the police, but you'll have actual evidence. When the police arrive, you can say, "Here's the guy, go get him." It's truly incredible.
You can check in at home anytime, no matter where you are, anywhere. Just live stream HD footage directly to your smartphone. Plus, with SimpliSafe, there are never any expensive long-term contracts. Never. If you want to see for yourself what SimpliSafe's brilliant technology can do for your home and its security, visit simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. You'll even get our special 10% discount. That's only at simplisafe.com/ricochet. You're going to love the high-tech aspect of SimpliSafe home security. But, Jim, as we transition to crazy, there's a limit to where this great technology that's being developed in this country ought to go. And I think we've certainly found one. At least I think so. This is CNBC. Billionaire Elon Musk is known for his futuristic ideas, and his latest suggestion might just save us from being irrelevant as artificial intelligence grows more prominent. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO said on Monday that humans need to merge with machines to become a sort of cyborg. Quote, over time, I think we will probably see a closer merger of biological intelligence and digital intelligence, Musk told an audience at the World Government Summit in Dubai, where he launched Tesla in the United Arab Emirates. Quote, it's mostly about bandwidth, the speed of the connection between your brain and the digital version of yourself, particularly output. He says that computers can do a trillion bits a second, while humans can only type about 10 per second. But he doesn't want the robots to take over. He wants to merge them, Jim. So I'm sure that leaves you greatly comforted.
You know, okay, first of all, you should point out that Elon Musk is apparently one of the guys that Marvel kind of looked at as the, you know, closest real life analog to Tony Stark when they kind of went out and talked to his group and kind of were trying to develop the idea of how to make Tony Stark seem modern and relevant in the at that point was, you know, the late 2000s. They decided, okay, this is one of the guys who might be the closest thing to Tony Stark in the real world. So maybe he knows what he's talking about. If we're going to go with this, Greg, I'm looking at dermal armor. I want to be bulletproof. I want pistons in my legs. I want wired reflexes and obviously some sort of artificial muscle enhancement. That way I can be faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, and able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. I am one of those people who's kind of wary about all this kind of stuff. You always worry about at some point, does merging a man and machine, do you start meddling in things that shouldn't be meddled in? But a lot of people point this out when you really get into the, you know, will the future have cyborgs, Greg? Greg, I don't know about you, but I have two very thin plastic things on my eyes right now called contact lenses that allow me to see that I otherwise never could. At what point does that become like, you know, is that a merger of technology and human flesh to make something better than it could be? How many people have pacemakers? How many people have various little, you know, blood pressure monitors? Technology is always giving us little ways to connect ourselves to either machines or something artificial to improve our lives. Artificial limbs, right? So I'm not necessarily in a panic about it. The idea that everybody would have to go cyborg, I know a lot of people say that everyone's on a spectrum, that you're always a little bit psi, but I'm not so sure I believe that. I think that everyone should be left to make their own personal choices on their own cybernetic lifestyle. Cybernetic American community is not meant to be discriminated against or promoted either.
Was the Terminator a cyborg?
No, he was all human, artificial human flesh over a machine. So the skin was raised in vats and then put over the machine. So no, it didn't really count as a merging of human and machine.
Here's another paragraph from this story. During his talk,
Musk... Is it a little frightening that I knew exactly how to answer that question in great detail, Greg?
During his talk, Musk touched upon his fear of deep AI, which goes beyond driverless cars to what he called artificial general intelligence. This he described as AI that is smarter than the smartest human on Earth and called it a dangerous situation. Jim, shouldn't we just stop when we can make sure that they're close to being as smart as us but still remain just a little bit dumber so they don't kill us all?
Greg, wasn't the pursuit for artificial intelligence a concession that there's really no hope for building human intelligence? It was a bunch of people who were like really, you know, before Betsy DeVos came along, people who really tried to reform the public school system said, you know what? There's no way we can do this. With this system, we're never going to get smarter kids. Let's make robots instead. That'll be easier. So.
Well, it's not going to happen tomorrow. So at least we got that.
You know, look, let's give it access to nuclear weapons. What's the worst that could happen, right?
Are we going to have a cyborg as a national security advisor next? Is that what's going to happen here?
There we go. Actually, you could see Trump doing that, couldn't you? Right? Yeah. well, this is, you know, this is a former SEAL team leader. This one's a master strategist, but this one's got a robot arm. Ooh, ooh, I want that one. I want that one. So, yeah.
He's the best. Always the best. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit Simply Safe Home Security. Check out the new Simply Safe security camera. Also, don't forget about the 10% discount. SimplySafe.com/ricochet. And join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.